What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Back here on the Second Guest Show, Mike Dottiglia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside, right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and visit us. Bobby J and I will be on until 8 o'clock tonight. Saints practices start tomorrow. Bob, you will catch it. Now they change it now back to the afternoon. Practices.
Now the fans aren't allowed. The fans can see the Saints on Saturday against the Broncos, but tomorrow's going to be inside practice. Tomorrow and Wednesday, they're not going to be outside, and Saturday could be inside. So yeah, I always said, okay, they've played enough in the heat to get acclimated.
Yeah.
And Mike, you think about it. Well, if you count the game yesterday, okay, you had the Jaguars, you have the Broncos, you have the Cardinals, and you have the 49ers. That's four home games in a row. So, man, you don't go on the road for over a month, considering. And so a controlled environment, so they'll be practicing inside.
So you'll join us about 4:30, 4:35.
Yeah, I'm going to have to see. I know they have also tomorrow the Saints alumni, a lot of the players got invited.
Former players.
Yeah, former players invited to come practice and witness and, tour the facility and all. And see how nice it is compared to David Drive.
Bob, man, that you talk about a big change. You look at what they have now compared to what y'all had on David Drive.
No, my goodness. No, what they have now is the penthouse. We were in the outhouse. we were the old porta potty outside where you had the outdoor plumbing.
Bob, we were talking about this on the break that Justin Herbert's brother, Patrick Herbert, is a tight end. He's from Oregon. He went to the same college as Justin, his brother.
Yeah.
But he was on the special teams, and he's a backup tight end for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, Mike, and he ended up having a tackle, a miscellaneous tackle. So I was thinking, I thought it was special teams tackle, but I guess it was after a turnover, he ended up having a tackle. But I said, I wonder, that has to be related to Justin Herbert, and a big dude. He played at Oregon also.
Yes, he did. At Oregon. I never forget, Justin shows up at Manning, and, man, he's a big dude. Sitting in that chair, and we laughing, and somebody asked him something about, do you know Bobby Hebert? And so, he looked around. Everybody's laughing. They're pointing toward me. And he was like, what's going on? I said, no, I work with it. And he was like, if they did our lineage, we related.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere down the line, me and Mr. Hebert are related.
Yeah, Germanic tribe. His folks went to England. Mine went to France. But that's how you get Hebert, but Herbert, Heber, and all that. But, yeah, Justin Herbert, I tell you what, he's going to have a lot of pressure on him also. Even though the offensive, he lost Slater and all that, Mike, when is going to eventually click? Now, I think Trevor Lawrence has probably more pressure because he got paid before he actually did anything, the guarantee. I'd say the two guys, young guys, like in the Saints, are going to week one, Kyler Murray with the Cardinals. They guaranteed him $150 million. So it's
Bob,
like,
the other guy, too, is Caleb Williams. Now,
Williams
looked great last night in the little time he played against the Bills. And again, man, Pettibone told me this years ago, Richie Pettibone, former Tulane great. And, man, he played double-digit seasons in the NFL. And then he ended up being the defensive coordinator of those tremendous Washington Redskins teams under Joe Gibbs. And the two things he told me is, I said, how many meetings did Joe Gibbs go in to the defensive meeting? And he thought for a little while, and he said, one.
One.
He said, Joe controlled the offense. I ran the defense. But he said, I'm going to tell you something about preseason. And he said, it ain't my line. He said, I heard it from George Halas, the Papa Bear, year one when I was playing. The biggest mirage in pro sports is preseason football. really nothing real about preseason.
Well, the fans get ripped off. I mean, what you're having to pay, and, you know, you want the best product, but, you know, we'll still watch NFL Network and watch any game.
I know I did over the weekend.
They had an individual, I told Steve Geller, we got to get him on. I think it's Paul Zazy or something. He works for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. But he was saying how preseason is the biggest ripoff to fans, like financially. He said, look, if they really, because they're not going to give up the revenue. The owners, they want that money.
No.
And what they're charging you. But you know how the fans will want to see more meaningful games? Going to come to that when they go to the 17, 18 game schedule. But he went on to say, if they really need to make up the lost revenue, because there's really no preseason. You know, look at college, don't have preseason. Don't they just play? Because you can really have, like, control practice and all. They know who can make the team.
Okay, here's another moneymaker. Because we know, unless something happens to us in the next year or two, they're going to go to 18 games.
Right.
And there'll be two preseason games. Watch with the NFL Network now coming.
ESPN.
Joining forces with ESPN on a tag team situation. That they're going to be showing these control practices almost like a preseason
without
game.
And then, because you know why that's going to be so attractive? Because these control practices, like when they played the Rams.
It's one against one, right?
DeMario Davis, Chase Young, they playing. Yes. And they're competing. And you could see you have drives and all that. So it's the utmost competition. So he went on to say, look, and at the NFL, if they really need to make up the lost revenue, either raise season ticket prices a few bucks. You know, now, the fans don't want to hear that, but they'd rather pay a little more for something that counts than something that doesn't count, how preseason games are a ripoff, or they can eventually maybe squeeze a few more dollars out of your TV partners, because you can tell your TV partner, no, these are actually games that count versus a preseason game. And he goes, that way, now, this is where he caught my attention. He goes, that way you could make the preseason games free to the public. Oh, you say nothing's never free? So wait, now, Mike, where would he go on to say?
That ain't going
to
happen. No, I'm just telling
you. No, but you can make up the money, get them on TV. You know, you got to get the money still somewhere. But look how he said this, Howard. You know, you're always trying to promote your brand and all. He goes, this way you can make the preseason games free to the public, probably increase attendance. Mike, they said they had 70,000 people at the Superdome yesterday.
No.
Now, were they sold 70,000 tickets?
Well, because most people, they buy the package, and part of the package is buying the preseason games.
Yes, and I'm one of those. JoJo, my wife, gets the season tickets and is part of the package. But, yeah, the interest there, and then have a hard time even giving them away. But if you had something and you're trying to promote your brand and young people or underprivileged kids or whatever, the way you can make preseason games free to the public, probably increase the attendance, even though it would be a preseason game, and grow your brand even more, and nobody would feel like, because by the time you pay parking and you get the food and everything, it's like, well, you know, if it's a meaningful game, then you feel like you're doing something that's worth more while than watching the second half like yesterday in the game. And most of the cats out there, you got 11 or 11, they ain't even playing come September. You know what I mean? Like, they might be on a practice squad, or they might be going to get a real job, or not even playing. So I'm just saying that the actual game of football and the product, people want to see something that counts, and they want to see the best versus the best. And then you could still throw in there, like you said, when you're trying to figure out who's going to make your team.
The control practice.
Just control practice. Film that, and you could sell that to the network.
Well, man, listen, they got people behind the scenes that are trying to figure that out. But part of that, too, is getting the Players Association
to
agree to what the owners want. Because when the commissioner says this, this isn't Roger Goodell saying
as the owner.
He's the mouthpiece for the other 32 owners out there. They're the ones that are pushing. Hey, we paying you, what, $50, $60 million a year? You take the heat and say, we want to go to 18 games.
Yeah,
and then
it's going to be collectively bargained sooner rather than later. And I think Joe Burrow, I think he might have been on was it Barstool? He might have been on something where he commented that they would add an extra bye week.
Yeah.
And Mike, you can even have more. It's like they even have a form like more international games, so you're promoting the game that way. And, you know, 18 is an even number versus 17. So right now, if you're not playing overseas, I don't know, that doesn't seem fair. Like one, let's say within your division, one team has 9 home games and 8 away, and the other one only has 8 home games and 9 away. I mean, it's like that you know, home field advantage, that can make a difference.
So you and I will start doing pro football in early August, and we won't finish until early March.
Oh, yeah, late February, early March, watch.
That's what's going to happen when it's all said
and then
done.
Even even trying right now, is President's Day always on the same day? You know how I think so, President's Day, isn't it? I know it's right around, I'm going to say a top man, like a Valentine's Day, whatever. But President's Day, I heard they even came to the aspect to make the Super Bowl like a holiday. Because why in the hell, people don't want to go.
A sports holiday.
Yes, that, and you have it on President's Day, so Mike, you can have that long. So nobody's going to work on Monday. You have the Super Bowl, and it's not, now some people might take a day off, but this way, it's the 17th, Luke? So President's Day is on, well, what day is it?
But February 17th.
Well, what is February 17th in 26? You have it right here. Maxine.
We'll get all that information. We'll go to break. We'll come back, and we'll be joined by Troy Rink, who covers the Denver Broncos for Denver 7 TV right after this break here on the Big 8-7.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
WWL. Back here on the second guest show, Mike DeTillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. On our Oakwood Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, covers the Denver Broncos for Denver 7 TV, Troy Rink. Troy, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Troy, Sean Payton has pumped up the air on this team, telling everybody things. They got a shot at the Super Bowl. Again, man, it's going to be difficult to get in that threesome that have kind of edged around quite a bit with the Buffalo Bills, with the Kansas City Chiefs, Baltimore Ravens. From watching them, man, they got talent and they got depth. Now, can you win in January is going to be the big jump over the ditch, so to speak. But this is a really talented Broncos football team.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Like Peyton, I've switched jobs. I'm back in the newspaper world at the Denver Post, but I love coming on with you guys. You're right about Peyton, and you've seen it firsthand. He believes this team is capable of winning a Super Bowl. He stopped short, obviously, of saying they're going to win a Super Bowl. For your listeners, he said this is the 8th team in his history as a head coach that he actually believed that. So when you look back through the Saints teams, there's obviously 7 Saints teams he felt had an opportunity to win. So he's very confident in this group. They have a tremendous amount of depth, but let's be realistic. The reason his confidence is so high is he found his quarterback in Bo Nix, and they addressed offensive deficiencies by adding R.J. Harvey and J.K. Dobbins at running back, and they brought in Evan Engram at tight end. So they feel like they're going to be able to run the ball better and attack the middle of the field better. And defensively, they added Talanoa Hufanga and Dre Greenlaw to help, you know, control the middle of the field defensively. And they match up well against the Chiefs. They did not play well against the Ravens and the Bills. They got smoked by both those teams on the road. They're 2-2 in their last 4 against the Chiefs and should be 3-1. Frankly, they should have beaten them in Arrowhead. But it's a confident group. The culture has completely changed. There's buy-in at every level. There's talent at every level. But now you guys know, now's the hard part. You got to go prove it. It's funny. He put the target on their back, and then he took it off by complaining about everything from their first road trip in the preseason. It's like he started a fire that was a little more out of control than he liked. So then he started bitching about things again. So it was classic Sean Payton.
Hey, that's Troy. That's Sean being Sean. He did similar things here. You know, he kind of pumped the brakes, and then all of a sudden he let it go, and then he would get all upset.
Yeah.
And he loved big wins, but he loved stuff to kind of fall apart a little bit so that way he could get some meat on the bone to jump his team. Man, listen, he's a master of that sort of stuff, but you're right about the Bo Nix situation because a lot of people wondered a little bit about when he selected Bo, could he be that guy? And we saw flashes of it last year, and I think he got better as the season went along. Your thoughts in watching him training camp and in the preseason games, the progress that you've seen in Bo Nix?
Yeah, Sean was comparing him to Drew Brees.
Drew? Man, what?
Yeah, he's not Drew Brees, but he has characteristics of Drew. It's never fair to compare a kid to, you know, a guy who's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But the things he does that remind Sean of Drew are the way he processes information, the way he's able to throw on time, on target, and understand where everyone's out. I mean, this is a kid who basically, I think he was at Oregon with Dan Fouts. I mean, he played like 60 college games. He's married. You know, he got here, he's like 25 and married. And Sean recognized right away in a March workout before the draft, Sean had told me like he had 85 passes and he said like 84 of them were on target and the 85th one, the receiver probably should have caught it. He was his guy. He loved him. He loved the way he processed. He loved his character, his kind of no nonsense. And Nix has an edge like Drew, like where he knows stuff enough to challenge Sean. And you guys know this about Sean. If you don't challenge him once in a while, he will trample you and walk over you. And Bo is so smart as a second-year player, he's able to, you know, kind of get after Sean a little bit. Hey, why are we doing this? Are you sure? You know, and Sean loves that. He loves dynamic tension. He loves creative friction. And he's got that with Bo. You're right. Bo did not play well the first month of the season. It was a mess. And then he ends up finishing with 29 touchdowns passing, 4 rushing. And I said recently in my column, like, to criticize him would be like complaining about the mole on Cindy Crawford's face. Like, his rookie season was so amazing, given what they had had here since Peyton Manning. Guys, he was the 14th starter since Peyton Manning. And finally, the carousel of chaos, it finally, they pulled the emergency brake. They've got their guy. And the reason, you know, Sean is hopeful and this team is hopeful is not only is Bo a leader, but they don't have to have him score 30 points. Their defense should be top 3 in the league, if not tops, and they believe they're going to run the ball better, which is going to open up play action. And some of the things he struggled with last year in Bo were that kind of that layered throw from 10 to 20 yards. Those guys should be open more, as Bobby would know, with play action. So a lot of excitement about this team. And Sean loves this. It's not the Broncos against the world, but it's forming. You can feel it. And he can't wait to puff his chest out about this team.
You know, Troy, to me, even though Sean is the offensive coach, he realizes, to me, is where Denver gets it done is on defense. I mean, they said what a club record for sacks last year. And then we're familiar with Pat Surtain, and so that was the club's first defensive player of the year in 40-plus seasons. So to me, that's where they get it done. And Sean really embraces that. But do you think the defense could build upon where they were last year? Because, do you go from, like, being outstanding, top 3, to maybe be not just top 5 or top 3, but the best?
We know that defensive coordinator pretty good, Troy.
Yeah.
Man, Vance.
Louisiana.
Man, he knows how to coach on defense, and he got some talent. And his development of Benito to come off the edge was really telling last year. So you can answer Bob's question and also a little bit about we didn't see this from Benito early on in his career. But, man, last year, he really the flame was lit with him.
Yeah, can they get better to answer Bobby's question? Yes, and I know Vance, I was covering CU when they recruited him out of the New Orleans area as a quarterback. I had classes with him at college at CU, so I've known Vance for, you know, 3 decades. So he's an easy guy to root for, and he has them playing just so aggressively.
Troy?
Oh, did he drop?
Okay, we might have lost him. Coleman will get him back, and so he was talking about Vance Joseph and what he was able to do on the defensive side, the football. But Bob, it's that pressure points with Zach Allen, you know, and Benito, and man, they hit you a bunch of different ways from a pressure standpoint. But one thing they do, they stop the run. And
right.
So they put you in a lot of bad situations where they can do a lot of different things. And I think that's why they were really happy with Barron, picking him, Jahe Barron from Texas, because he played outside corner, played in the nickel, he played some free safety. So he's kind of like the queen's piece in chess that you move all across the board.
Well, Mike.
Okay, we got Troy back. Troy, go right ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know where I...
Oh, you drop out again?
We dropped out again with Troy.
He was trying to... I don't know where I was. Last left you, but...
he's maybe
well,
in the
well, Mike,
spot.
As we're waiting for Troy, what about who you compare Pat Surtain to? Because, Mike, not only was he the best cornerback, NFL Defensive Player of the Year, come on. Mike,
he is getting close to be in Revis Island territory.
Okay.
No, he's that good.
No, I know. I'm a big Pat Surtain fan.
He's getting close to that. Now, Revis, Darrell Revis did it for a number of years, and we just see the progress, you know, with Patrick Surtain. And
they paid him, Mike.
Man, they paid him a lot of money. His dad now coaches in the secondary for Florida State. Man, he had coached at a high school in South Florida for quite some time. But, man, Surtain, who was a longtime LSU commitment.
Yeah.
And to the final day, and Nick Saban yanked it on there. Maybe Coach O can tell us that story. I'm sure it's not a good one of how he ended up at Alabama. But you understand with Surtain, man, he is an elite cover corner in this league, and he tackles well. I know when they picked him, Vic Fangio made the comment that's what I'm looking for in a corner. Not only a guy that can cover, but that can tackle.
Right, and they don't fall off trees. So why don't you get a bunch of them? Well, they don't have a bunch of them.
They ain't got a lot. I mean, you got a couple, three that would be.
Well, Mike, you like 6'2", 205 around there, corner. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's a big guy. And then getting Jahe Barron from Texas, who has played all across the board. I heard Coach Sark make the comment, he's the smartest player we got on this team.
Oh, that's another check. Another check right there.
And so a lot of people thought they'd go offense and maybe go with Marion Hampton. You know, the big
right,
running
right,
back.
Right, right, right. Yeah, from
Carolina,
North Carolina. Who ended up
went
going
to the Chargers.
Chargers, right.
But Sean, he really liked R.J. Harvey. Man, I saw R.J. play so many games at Central Florida. He started at Virginia. They transferred to Central Florida. Bob, he's, you know, he's built like Dalton Hilliard.
Because Mike, he's not very tall.
He's maybe 5'8".
Yeah.
And he's
right.
205, 210 pounds.
Yeah.
He's sort of built like Dalton in that, man, you get one shot at him, and that's about it, because he gets through the line so fast, and you really don't see him well.
Well, Sean don't know how to use him. He knew how to use Reggie Bush, Darren Sproles.
and he can catch the ball coming out of the backfield. We'll take a break and come back with more Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
With WL. Back here on the Second Guest Show, Mike Dettillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Abey. I want to thank Troy Rink. We had some problems connecting up with him. He was in a bad location, but we want to thank him for giving us some insights on the Denver Broncos. And, Bob, you brought it up about the Broncos, and everybody talks about their offense. And Sean, but man, what they got on defense, oh, my goodness.
Well, no, Mike, they're for sure top five, if not top three, and what they're doing is trying to shoot to be the number one overall defense.
That's why.
And they had Pat Surtain, who was the Defensive Player of the Year.
And so they used their first-round pick on Jahe Barron, okay?
Yeah.
What was at Texas, and he played outside corner, in the slot, free safety. And so Sean always talked about having this multiple position player in round one that he wanted. And apparently Barron was one of the two guys that he really had an interest in, and he ended up selecting him.
You know, Mike, and you know, they get after the quarterback. So offensive line, even backup players.
Now, did they lead the league in sacks?
No, they set a club record. No, they set a club record, but this is like, you know, in the history of the Denver Broncos.
That's a long since 1960.
Yeah, the most sacks they've ever had in a season. So they and Mike, I was watching, like I said, on the NFL Network, the Cardinals Denver game, and even the guys trying to make the team,
okay,
they get after Clay and Tune. Oh, they were getting out. He didn't have a chance.
He got beat up pretty good in that game.
Well, Mike, I'm just telling you, we're gonna look and you know, in the meeting rooms, they need to challenge the offensive line. Because I tell you what, before the season starts, this will be a big challenge as you could get going against that Denver front.
And that's
when you're
second
to pass
and
the
third
ball.
Team units with
yes,
people
yes.
at the tune.
Yes.
It wasn't the number one unit.
Right, right.
It was the second and the third team units
yeah.
that were after him.
And, you know, Mike, there's another individual that for them, like Sean Payton, kind of, I guess, unlocked him in November. Marvin Mims Jr., the all-pro now punt returner, and all of a sudden, Sean started designing and feeding him, getting him the ball in his hands, and expanded his work as a pass catcher. He had a big play touchdown. Remember then at Cleveland and Cincinnati. So watch him. Instead of waiting, watch a Marvin Mims come September.
Bob,
Marvin
Mims Jr. He's to me, was a similar player to Velus Jones. When Velus came out of University of Tennessee, he was a punt return guy. He ran the ball like a running back. And I think that's what Peyton is trying to do. The Saints will do with Velus Jones, using him as a running back, a receiver coming out the backfield, also a kick returner. Mims did it last year for the Broncos.
Yeah, if you did it, Mike, look at him. He's going in his third year now. He was a second-round draft pick in 23. And if you look in the final seven games, Mike, it was like, whoa. It's like, and then Sean's realizing, well, I should have probably utilized
him
more early.
More.
Well, come this September, I think he ain't going to wait till November to utilize him.
I can tell you why he didn't use him before. Sean was famous for it. You got to know your plays. If you don't know it 100% of the time, you ain't getting out on the field. How many times he preached that on the coach's show? I can't trust you if you don't know plays. I think that's what happened with Mims.
Come on. If you don't know what the hell you're doing, I can't trust you. I'm not going to put you out there. Now, Mike, the question I have for you, because you look, and knock on wood, the injury report, and who's going to be available to play against the Cardinals? And it's going to be here before you know it. And I'm actually just your opinion. Who you think's more important to have against the Cardinals? So let's say come September to kick off the season, the first four games, Alante Taylor or Trevor Penning?
Well, Alante Taylor.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. You know, as much as we offensive line, we need Trevor Penning. Alante Taylor, what are they asking him to do? That star position?
You are guarding, in essence, the whole world changed, and we watch it, and Pete Jenkins always tells me this, about how football is still one in the trenches, but it frays out, and that's where the changes are. And so he said, you didn't see this, and he gave Peyton a lot of credit. He said, the first time I ever saw a big man playing the slot or your number one receiver was Marcus Colston. Marcus told us that come Super Bowl time when we interviewed him. And now what's happening? You got all these $28 to $30 million receivers. On third down, guess what they're doing? They're not playing outside. In the slot.
Right.
That's where Alante would be going one-on-one.
With Brandon Staley's defense. And, Mike, the players he's utilized at star position, Derwin James, Jalen Ramsey, you know, Coach Staley's utilized them. So that's what he's counting on Alante Taylor. So
his blitz ability.
Yes.
That we haven't talked a ton about. But, man, did he get after little Bryce? Man, he had him
game.
On his heels because Bryce didn't expect that's where the pressure would come from.
Yeah, no, boy, he was second in sacks. God, I think that the guy maybe for the Chargers was number one with five, and he ended up with four, but he had three the first game. So why didn't we send him more? He thought, like, oh, man, he's going to have double-digit sacks at the DB.
I think if he's healthy, Staley will send him more than what we saw a year ago.
Yeah.
I think you can bank that. But the big years, because when you're paying money, the sort of bigger money, to players like a Chase Young. Now, the bad thing about Alante is this is basically his contract
to get paid.
And okay, he's hurt, but he understands this is a big year for
Mike,
him.
But, Mike, you know why? But that's why I'm worried, because you're growing. You know how your hip and all that, how you got to turn?
The twist
and the twist,
and twist back.
I mean, if your groin's jacked up, I don't know how serious it was.
I don't know.
I mean, it's not like, oh, my you know, my form is like all jacked something. Like, you got to run. You're playing that star, you got to be able to run. And if his groin's hurt, I mean, put it this way, the Cardinals are going to know that, and they're going to if he's in the game.
I would test him the first play. I would go after him and say, how good or how healthy are you?
Are you trying to play through, and are you really hurt? And then, Mike, if you're not 100%, you know, you can re-injure, then you have a bigger setback.
Well, Venturi told me this about Julian Blackman, and he said, Mike, he tears up his labrum week one. So he says, you know, other teams, they would try to throw the ball over the top. But he said Blackman could still cover. But he said, then they figured out,
to force him to
come up the seam and run support. And he said, man, Mike, he said, you had the right term for it. It was an adventure to watch him try to tackle somebody in the open field. And you basically one-armed with that torn labrum.
Well, Mike, I could tell you, they weren't taking it to the ground, but he wasn't one-armed against the Rams. When he was filling, Mike, I'm telling you, he's coming. As much as we're all excited about Justin Reed, I'm excited about Blackman. How he makes plays on the ball. And, you know, Reed can run support. I'm telling you, Blackman, Mike, you remember you asked him about his tackle? I go, no, he's coming up.
Yeah.
He ain't hurt no more.
And he's played both free and started in the league.
Yeah.
Free and also strong safety. We'll be back to finish it up here on Second Guess right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here on Second Guest Show, Mike DeTellier along with the Cajun Cannon Bobby Hebert at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bobby J and I will be here every Monday throughout the football season and finishing off the Monday after Super Bowl Sunday. Bob, you're going to go to practices tomorrow
and
afternoon.
Wednesday, yep.
Padded and also
practice.
Wednesday,
yep.
And they padded practices inside.
Yeah, and it is the last practice. Really, training camp.
Really ends Wednesday,
yes,
right?
Yes. Now they have a little practice on Thursday, and they play on Saturday. So really they have two really highly competitive days, and that will be tomorrow and Wednesday, where you still consider it like training camp.
Bob, I'd be interested to see Is Neil healthy enough to play in game three? If not, basically his
season. Well, did they put him on IR?
Not yet. And so my deal is,
they might try and stash him, Mike, if that hamstring is bad.
If I'm thinking about it, maybe I try to stash him away on the practice squad.
Yeah, but wouldn't they really like
him?
Now,
you
got to
put him
on the active roster.
Your active roster to steal him away.
Yeah.
Because I think the four running backs, you look at it, barring an injury, certainly we know Alvin Kamara's one. And I think Kendra Miller's done enough to be the two guy.
And they want him to work out. Yeah.
And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, three, and Velus Jones, four.
I would agree with that. That's who I would go with. I mean, based on what I witnessed in practice.
And you can put veteran players on the practice squad. Is that maybe where Cam Akers ends up, too?
I don't know, Mike. Cam Akers don't like the Cam Akers that I know from the Rams.
Bob, when you tear up two Achilles, man, and to even play is remarkable.
Yeah. Not one, but two, and then, playing at the NFL level. No, he looks in shape. He's going, but he just.
But he lost the burst.
Yeah, the burst. And, to me, you know what's impressive to me about Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Look how he was running hard, breaking tackles.
And he can pass protect. Yep. We'll be back with more of Sports Talk tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Thank you for listening to Second Guest here on the Big 870.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.